weiß Bescheid.
Entende.
Welcome to All Caribbean Entrepreneurs. If you've been ready and waiting to take your business digital and get paid online while you sip something strong on the beach, this podcast is for you. We'll hear from the Caribbean's finest entrepreneurs on topics like e-commerce, business development, brand building, social media, their wins and failures. This is the only place in the region helping you navigate the digital age from the Caribbean's perspective. This is Digipreneur FM. And now, let's give it up for the Digiboss himself, Mr. Karan Rose.
Thank you. We are live inside the first official episode of Digipreneur FM. Listen, I couldn't be happier to get this show on the way. It's been a long time coming, man. And I wanted to kick off the very first episode with giving you guys the story of how I got into, you know, what is known as digital entrepreneurship, having an online business and thriving in this digital age. So I want to thank all of you guys and girls for tuning in. This is really for you. This is a place where we can come, we can learn, we can talk, we can listen, and have a lot of fun. So without further ado, how did I get into digital entrepreneurship? How did Karan Rose become the DigiBoss? Well, if you guys are hearing an accent, I mean, I like to, you know, kind of take it back so you guys have an idea as to where I'm coming from. So when you hear the accent, I got a Canadian accent, right? And I was born in Trinidad and Tobago, the beautiful island of Trinidad and Tobago. And my mom, you know, packed me up when I was just a few weeks old, and we migrated over to Canada. And I spent my life just about 29 years in Canada. And I wouldn't change it for the world. I mean, I hated the winter, yeah. I hated shoveling, yeah. But I definitely wouldn't change it for the world. I had a lot of ups and downs, but for the most part, it was a lot of good times. And being in Canada really prepared me for where I'm at today. I was able to land some pretty amazing jobs, and some of those jobs were really influential in how I approach building my business and just my mindset right now. And two of those jobs that really kind of helped me get into this frame of mind that I'm in is my old job back at TELUS, which is like, if you're listening from the Caribbean, TELUS is like the Digicel or Flow. It's a telecommunications company. And I was a sales rep, and I was able to sell smartphones to people. But it was more than just sales. You really had to know the tech. You had to get to know the people. And you had to educate the people in order for them to really buy what you were selling. So it was a hell of a lot more than just sales. It was really more about education than anything else. And the next job for me that really helped me was Apple. Steve Jobs' philosophy on how to approach technology and just the way of life was really instrumental in grooming me to get to this point. He built that brand and that store to focus on education. They took education of the technology to some unseen heights at Apple. There was always courses. There was always something to learn because you did not want to be that person who, when you had, you know, customers coming up to you and they're asking you questions about, you know, how to do X, Y, and Z inside their music producing software, you did not want to be that guy that did not know. So there was a lot of courses to really take, and it really drove home the point of education. The more you educate people on how to use the tools, the softwares, the platforms, you know, they build that trust with you, but then they also utilize the technology to the fullest extent, right? And moving to Trinidad, one of the things I realized very early was we just never really had a place for you to go and learn about the technology. Most of the telecommunications companies, they don't actually teach you how to use the platforms. They don't have dedicated spaces to go and learn how to utilize the technology. So that was a huge gap that I seen when I had came back. Now, I always get asked, you know, you move to Canada, you know, Caribbean folk are trying to get out of the Caribbean. Why on earth did you come back? And man, it's, oh boy, where do you even begin? But I don't want to make it about the bad times. I like to really teach people about, you know, how to make the best out of their situations. And I try not to stick too much in my bad times. But for me, when I decided to make the move back to Trinidad, I was going through a lot of personal issues. I was hanging with the wrong people, was getting into all sorts of problems. I ran into some legal troubles as well. And I was at a point in my life where I felt like there was no decision that I was making at the time with the knowledge that I had and what was around me and everything going on. I didn't feel like any decision I made was the right decision. And that just kept leading me down the wrong path, the wrong path, the wrong path. And finally, I just got fed up. I wanted a change of pace. I seen, you know, quite a bit of my friends moving to different parts of the world. I had friends that were jumping on cruise ships and working and sailing the world. I had friends that were moving over to China to teach English. Friends that were moving down to the States. And a few of my core group of guy friends had made the decision to move over to the western parts of Canada and work in the oil fields. And they were paying pretty good money. Accommodations were covered. Those guys were over there and they were pretty much just pocketing the money because a lot of their expenses were taken care of. And when I was really going through it, I thought to myself, you know, that might be the move for me. That might be the play. Let me go move over to Alberta. Let me go work in one of these oil companies and, you know, let me get that change of pace, that change of scenery that I so desperately needed at the time, right? Things are really rough. Things are really rough. But then I decided, you know what? Wait a minute. You know, I'm a dual citizen. I have both my Canadian citizenship and my Trini citizenship. And I never lost my Trini citizenship. So, you know, why not check out Trinidad? The majority of my family is still here. Why not check out Trinidad and see what's going on? And it's really amazing how things kind of work out. Because when I moved here, I really had no expectations. All I knew was that where I was at in my life in Toronto, it just wasn't it. I needed that change of pace. You know, for a year, collect my thoughts and come back and really try to rectify my life. And when I moved to Trinidad, you know, some amazing things started to happen. I got to spend, you know, time with my grandparents. I got to spend a lot of time with my family. I got to just breathe. I got to breathe. For the last 3 to 4 years living in Toronto, it stopped feeling like I could breathe. But when I moved to Trinidad, I felt this big weight off my shoulders. And I guess that's also because Ever since I was growing up and we've been traveling, we've been vacationing in Trinidad. Anytime I come off the planes, and this is before they had built the new airport. This is when they had the old airports, and they used to roll the stairs up to the plane. And as soon as that door opens and you felt that warmth, you're like, oh man, I'm home. And I've always felt at home when I was in Trinidad. I always felt like a visitor when I was in Toronto. And so when I came back, you know, everything just felt like this was where I needed to be. I didn't have a plan. I had sold everything that I had, my cars, my everything in my apartment. I really just packed all of my clothes in a barrel. I came down with a couple $1,000s in the bank account, and I just came down. I didn't have this grand plan for when I came to Trinidad. I just knew that, you know what, let me just take a year away from Toronto and then I'll come back. And when I came, I got my first job just a couple months in. So I moved to Trinidad October 2013. I spent a month in Jamaica. I spent December in Jamaica for my birthday. And then February 2014, I got my first job at DirecTV. And the corporate environment here was, you know, completely different than what I was accustomed to. You know, over here, it felt like, you know, the wild, wild west, where you really just had to kind of watch everybody sideways. The corporate environment here was really cutthroat. And I never quite got comfortable, but it was a change of pace. And I dealt with it as best as I could. I was at DirecTV for, I believe, 4 or 5 months, 5 months tops. And what happened was, I was looking into getting into a smartphone repair program, because I've been in the telecommunications industry since I was 19 years old. I love the technology. I've always been a fan of it. I loved educating people about it. I loved the tech itself. Like, I was a big fan. I still am. I don't really blog about smartphone tech anymore, but I still geek about it privately and with a couple of guys that we've gotten pretty close with over the years. And so when I found this smartphone repair program, it was at a private school called ASTI, and I was in Barataria, and I jumped in there. I was taking the classes on the weekend. It was a bit helter-skelter. The program was a bit sketch. I was the only one there, and it didn't feel organized, but nonetheless, I was still going to it for the first 4 or 5 weeks I was going. But by that fifth week, the director of the school, he sat me down and we had a conversation because he heard the accent. So he was like, you know, like, where are you from? And when I told him where I was from and, you know, what I'm doing in Trinidad and, you know, why I'm taking this program, that one conversation led to a 3.5 hour conversation right in his office. And I guess he just liked my vibes and, you know, where my head was at. And he had told me that he had a company that was looking for a new general manager, and it was in the smartphone industry. It was a local brand. They had a few branches, and they were the ones that were supplying a lot of the broken phones so that, you know, the people coming in that want to take the course that they could operate on. So he scheduled a meeting. I met with who was at that point in time the old GM. They were looking for another one. They were looking for a new one, but I met with the old one at the time, and all three of us sat down, had a really good conversation, and they decided that, you know what, with my knowledge, with my skill set, with my vision, my outlook on the industry, I could really help them a lot. And so what the company did was they decided to create a position for me as kind of like a research officer. So I was, you know, researching, you know, the best phones for them to purchase. I was working on training material to train the staff. We were looking at trying to build a education platform to teach other sales reps so other companies could come in and bring their reps to. And it was going good. It was going good until, you know, the owners of the company started to lean on me a lot more. And the old GM, you know, wasn't really feeling that. So we kind of bumped heads here and there. Even though he was the one that kind of brought me in, it felt like I quickly wore out my welcome. So he actually quit the company like 4 months after I had started. And then I ended up getting this new position, well, the role of the GM, and taking over where he kind of left off. And I'm not gonna lie, it was that position was great, because what it allowed me to do was I got to interact with the population. I got to talk to people. I got to see where their minds was at. I got to see gaps in the market with, you know, why Trinidad was so, you know, why they were not willing to test out and try out technology. I got to see a lot of things, a lot of good things that really helped my growth here in Trinidad. If there is one thing that company really helped me do, was just to be in a position to interact with people and see some of the challenges that we face within the tech space in Trinidad and how culture affects how we go about accepting new technology and the lack of trust with institutions. Like, you can't just come to Trinidad and offer a new solution and people just jump on it. That just doesn't happen. There is a lack of trust with all of the institutions, and because nobody teaches you how to utilize the platforms, the software, the tools, you know, you'll have the early adopters, you'll have those people that will jump on it and will try it out. But then for the most part, the majority of the population doesn't really jump on it. They kind of just leave it. And it really is to do with a lack of trust. So I got to see all of those things. I was with that company for a year. And after a year, I decided, you know what, it was time for me to kind of move out on my own thing. At the time, my stepfather had his best friend who was back and forth between the US and Trinidad. And when my stepdad was here in Trinidad for Carnival, we all had a conversation. We're all just chopping it up. And he was asking me, my stepdad's friend was asking me, you know, like, what am I doing here? You know, how am I liking it? And when I told him what I'm into and what I do, he was like, yo, this is very interesting. You know, there might be an opportunity for us to work together. He has a place. His family has a little mini mall. And this might be something that he would be willing to invest in. And so when I left the smartphone company, I moved into that. We started to work on building out this smartphone business, a smartphone repair shop. And it was a chance for me to kind of really be, you know, in control of my very first business. And that didn't work out. We worked together good for a couple of months, but we butt heads. I wanted the business to go a certain way. I was holding up my end of the deal. He just was distracted on other things. And the support that he was supposed to give me in terms of financing the business, because he wanted to finance it and me and have me run it, it got to the point where it just wasn't coming in. I had to use all of the money that I had saved, you know, for my own thing, something that was going to be 100% mine. I had to start to burn into those funds. And when it got to the point where I burned out through all of my personal savings and, you know, I wasn't getting no assistance from him, I just thought it would be better off if I said, you know what, let me just pack up my stuff and, you know, deuces. But the experience was good because I got my first taste at a failure. And when partnerships, you know, people come to you all the time with the best of intentions. And it feels like it's a fit. It feels like it can work. You believe in everything that they say. You guys start doing whatever you guys plan to do or whatever you set out to do. And it doesn't work out the way that you want it to do. So I got my first taste of a failure with the company. The company was called Gadget Geeks. We had a nice little spot in Arima. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot in that short space of time. And if it's one thing it taught me was, you know, you just need to be, you need to do more due diligence when you are jumping into any sort of partnerships. And not every partnership is going to work out, and that's okay. I was able to learn. I got a lot of experience, and that was okay. Now, after that, my mom had invested in a club on the avenue. So during that point in time, when I was at Gadget Geeks, I was, you know, flying down to the avenue to work inside the club as well. So I was kind of involved in like basically two brand new businesses, right? So it was a lot of pace. Like I was working 7 days a week and what felt like 24/7, because the club, as you know, is evenings and night times, and it's Trinidad. So, you know, clubs don't ever close. So we were open every single day, right? And I was the youngest guy, you know, as a part of the ownership team. So, you know, I could come. I was flexible when some of the other people had kids. You know, I could come. And, you know, almost every other night was a party. So, and I'm fresh. I'm still, you know, relatively new in Trinidad. So, you know, I'm there. I'm more than happy to be there because I like the excitement. It was fun. So I didn't mind. At that point in time, too, I had started my hookah company. And that hookah company, I was going to different clubs and offering hookah services. So I was doing the hookah services inside of our club, going to other clubs offering hookah services. I was doing Gadget Geeks, so I had, you know, three things kind of going on at the same time. But Gadget Geeks had fizzled out, you know, when the club had really kicked off. So I didn't have, you know, all three things going at the same time for too long. That was only like a month, right? Everything's going good with Shisha House. Shisha House was my hookah company, my hookah brand. Everything was going good with that, having a lot of fun, doing the clubs, doing the parties, meeting people. I'm enjoying myself. Again, I'm still relatively fresh in Trinidad. This is 2015 going into 2016, so I'm still relatively new. I'm still meeting people, still having fun. Now, May of 2016, and I'm kind of skipping ahead because I want to get to the whole point of, you know, how digital entrepreneurship really happened for me and why I take it so seriously and really pour my heart, sweat, and tears into it. May 2016, I had some unfortunate events happen to me. Now, if you've heard me on Caribbean Power Lunch, shout out to my guy, Kevin Valley. If you've heard my episode on redirection with Dr. Terry Carrell out of Jamaica, big shout outs to her. Love her to death. You would have heard about my misfortunes with the run-ins in the law here in Trinidad. And I don't talk about it often because, I mean, again, anytime you come to my platforms, I want to give you value. I want to teach you. I want to help you guys elevate. No time for sad stories about me, right? So I don't dive into it too much, but I mean, we're trying to get to that point of, you know, how I became this digital entrepreneur, and I got to dive into it, right? So if you know me, I have two kids. I have a beautiful daughter who just turned 13, April 26. Somebody help me. And I have my son who just turned 6 years old. So 2016, I left my house. I was going to meet up with my son, drop off some diapers, some milk, and some money. You know, doing daddy thing, right? On my way to meeting up with my son, I was crossing over the bus route. And for those of you listening who's not in Trinidad, just think of like this private road that, you know, taxis and the police and the ambulance and special services use. You can't really go on it, but we have to cross over it to continue going on our journey, right? So I was driving. I'm getting ready to cross over the bus route, and my light is green. As I'm halfway over the bus route, my light turns yellow. Now, I had seen a police officer on his motorcycle, and he was texting. I'd seen his head down, his phone out. And coming from Canada, you just always have a mind. When police are around, you just always have your eye on them, right? So I was watching him in my rearview mirror. And when I had finished crossing over the bus route, I realized that the light had just turned red, but that's when he had looked up. So for him, it looked like I ran a red light. So he you know, starts up his bike. He turns down the street that I was on. Lights come on, no problem. Pulls me over. Stops me and he's like, "Hey, you know you ran a red light?" I'm like, "No, I did not." He's like, "All right, no problem. License and registration." So I give him my license, my registration. But it turns out that when I gave him my Canadian license, he's like, "Yo, where is your passport to go along with the Canadian license?" I'm like, "Well, I don't carry that around. That's at home." He's like, "Well, you know it's against the law to drive with your Canadian license and not have your passport here with you." I said, "I did not know that. As a matter of fact, when you're coming into the country, they tell you to keep that passport nice and safe. Don't bring it outside." So he's like, "No, my friend." He's like, "If you don't have your passport with you," he's like, "you know, we're going to have to take you to the police station." I was like, "Okay, well, I didn't really think nothing of it." So he calls the supervisor. Supervisor comes. He tells the supervisor the deal. Supervisor's like, "Well, you know what to do? Cuff him up." I was like, "Wow." So I had to leave my car there, call my cousin. My cousin took the car home, and I'm in the police station now. I was in the police station for 2 days. And basically, they held me there because, for one, they needed to check to see if I was in the country legally, even though they had my Trinidad ID and whatnot. And then after the second day, we go to court and my family hires a lawyer. I meet with the lawyer. Lawyer says, "Hey, don't worry. Spoke with the police captain. They're just going to give you a fine and you'll be on your way." So we get in front of the judge. Judge asks me a bunch of questions. Well, asks the lawyer a bunch of questions. Lawyer answers. I had to plead guilty in order to get the ticket. So once I pled guilty, we're expecting the ticket. And because the judge, you know, heard my accent, knows I'm a dual citizen. And later we found out that she kind of ruled this way because she felt like I could have left at any time without any consequence. she decided to give me 6 months hard labor in the beautiful prison here in Trinidad and Tobago. So I had to do 3 months inside Golden Grove here in Trinidad. And I mean, again, I don't like to dive into the story because anytime I want you guys to hear me, I want you guys to be getting information that helps you not feel sorry for me. But the story is so crucial for what happens next, because during that time, locked down for 3 months, the place is, you know, an abomination inside there. It is hell inside of hell. I hear a lot of people on TV talking about, you know, prisoners' rights, and look, they're doing this, that, and the third. It's just not the case when you're inside there, right? It's not the case. Being inside there gave me a chance to sit still. It gave me a chance to think. It gave me a chance to recalibrate. And in that 3 months, I felt like nothing mattered. I felt like the world, you know, was moving on at its own pace, and I was just over here. And during that time, I was working. I got to work at a working station, so I was keeping pretty busy. I got to work out. I didn't eat meat for a couple months, for the 3 months. I had access to the library, so I read a whole lot. I journaled. I sat down. I planned, and it wasn't a prison cell that we were in. Like, because we're on the working station, we kind of, our places, our residence is like this big warehouse with all these bunk beds. So you're not locked down. You're in jail, but you're not locked down, right? And because of the working station that I was at, that was really only reserved for, you know, people with lighter sentences and, you know, people who were just, you know, really good with the guards and whoever. But point of the matter is, it wasn't no problem inside there. It was grown folks who were there on, you know, minor stuff. And I had some really intelligent people around me to keep me sane, had, you know, really good conversations. And it was during that time I got familiar with, you know, local TV here in Trinidad, and I got to learn about the different local stations, the who is who's. I started to actually read the newspapers and see what newspaper was what, see some of the writers and whatnot. And coming down to, I think, maybe three quarters of the way finished, I remember turning to my neighbor and I was like, yo, when I get out of here, I'm going to be on CNC3. Like, I'm going to build a business and I'm going to be on CNC3. I'm going to get on the Express newspapers. And he just laughed and he's like, yo, I hear you. And I'm like, nah, you ain't. You hearing me, but you ain't hearing me. I'm going to be on CNC3. I'm going to sit right across from Hema. I'm going to talk to Hema. I'm going to be in the papers. Y'all go hear about me. Y'all watch. And we laughed. We had a good laugh, right? But I was dead serious. And that's because when I was journaling, I was scripting out my passions, what I was good at, what I wanted to do. Planning, you know, how I would do it, and just brainstorming and just dumping everything onto the paper. And I remember one night I jumped up out of my sleep. It felt like I don't want to say it was a nightmare, but you ever had those sleeps where it's not a nightmare, but, you know, something happens in your dream and you just jump up and maybe you were going through a problem that you couldn't fix, and you said, ah, forget it. And you just went to go sleep it off, and you kind of just jump up out of your bed, and you're like, oh my God, I know exactly the solution to the problem. Let me go and handle that one time. Mind you, it's like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. But in your dream, you solved it. So you up, you at it, and you're going to go and solve that problem right then and there. And I remember jumping up out of my sleep one night. And that was because I had the name of the business I wanted to start. And that business, when I jumped up and wrote it down, was Droid Island. And that was because I had a dream that I was stranded on this island. I don't know if you guys ever watched that movie with Tom Hanks and the ball, Castaway. I felt like I was in that kind of dream where I'm stranded on this island, small island, one palm tree, surrounded by sand and nothing but water. And the only companion I had is this android robot. That's my only companion, is this android robot. And I remember, you know, on the island, I'm, in my dream, I'm just, you know, there doing my thing, and Droid is over there doing his thing. And I remember just saying to myself in the dream, God damn it, stranded on this Droid Island. And I jumped up and I was like, oh man, that's it. I'm in Trinidad and Tobago. I'm on an island. The number one dominating smartphone platform, smartphone OS, is Android, and everybody has an Android here. I could start a business called Droid Island, and Droid Island would work on educating people about the technology. We can sell the products. I could be the face of this brand. And I wrote that down. Right? Now, when I came out, my ex at the time was super dope at marketing. And when I came out, if there's one thing that she really helped me with, was I had this annoying view of building websites. And the one thing she really helped me with, she was dope at building websites. She showed me that my fear and my annoyance of building websites, you know, was only because I never learned how to build websites in WordPress. So I remember she sat me down and she went over the basics with me. And again, I'm pretty tech savvy and I experiment and I'm willing to dive in. So the minute she showed me the basics, oh man, I was on YouTube for hours on end. I bought books on how to build WordPress websites, like you name it. I was in the forums. Oh man. When I came out September 2016, within a couple of weeks, we purchased the domain name droidislandtt.com. We purchased the very first theme, and I went to work on it, building it up. And you wouldn't believe it, but by mid-November, so I don't even think I had came out of Golden Grove a month. Might have been a month. But when I built my website, I started to blog on smartphone tech, and I just started to push out content like I was going mad. I felt like I had, you know, years worth of content just bottled up in me that I was just furiously putting out. And within about a month, I got a message from CNC3 asking me if I could come in because they want to feature me on CNC3's Tech Thursday. Man, the feeling that I had was, you can't even describe it, because I remember the conversation that I had with Rasta. That was the guy that was next to me, Rasta. And on the way to the station, you might think I'm joking because things like this don't really happen, but at Independence Square by the KFC, I'm crossing over to go by RBC. And as I'm about to step onto the pavement, I hear my name. And when I look to see who's calling me, it was the officer that had arrested me. And he was like, "Yo, you're out?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Wow, you know, damn, I you know, had no idea." I was like, "All is well, my friend." And I just kept it moving. But like, he was just so shocked to see me. You know, I was in a suit, well, shirt and tie. I slimmed down, I dropped weight, you know, had my abs again, was looking good, you know? Your boy was looking good. The man seen me at my finest. He seen me at my worst when he locked me up and, you know, put me in that rundown holding cell. But he also got to see me at one of my cleanest. Dropped weight, clean shaven, had a little goatee. I was looking good, feeling good. And I was on the way to like one of like the highlights of my life. You know, getting featured for my knowledge. And that interview was that interview, a light bulb turned on for me. Like everything just flipped at that interview because I realized that, yo, I'm getting recognized for my knowledge. I just came out of Golden Grove and I came out, built a site. People are taking notice because the gap is there. The education gap is there in technology. People are taking notice. And in that moment, I felt validated. Like, I've known for, you know, the 2 years I was in Trinidad that there was this gap in the education side of technology here. And I've just never was in the right position to really capitalize and make it work. But I also had to learn the people and learn the culture and see the gaps for myself, right? So nothing before its time. But in that moment, it felt like, yo, validated because now there are people that are on one of the biggest platforms in the country saying, yo, we need this. We need this. We love your style. We love how you write. We love the mission that you are on. And the light bulb switched, and it just never stopped from that day. From that day of the CNC3 interview, within a couple of weeks, I got a job at Digicel. I worked at Digicel for 6 months. I was able to save, put some money aside. Me and my ex pooled our money together, and we were able to open up the Droid Island store to sell smartphones. And I was able to quit my full-time job. I had to lean on her to really, you know, help me, to help me out. You know, when you have that partnership and you got to pool your funds together to make an idea, make a dream work, you got to do it. And so I had that store. And that store, we built, put products in, but I was blogging at such a high rate. So my traffic was coming in from my blogs. And then I linked up with my guy, Devon X. Scott. Shout outs to Devon. Linked up with him, and me and him started to do videos together. We started a YouTube channel. We started putting up videos for the channel. The channel was called The Tech Table. We're putting out so much content on the videos. I'm putting out content through the blogs that I was hardly ever in the store, but I was always getting calls of people saying, "Hey, we're in front of the store, but the store is closed," right? But I'm getting so much traffic because of all the content that's being created. So what happens next is me and my ex, we go through a breakup. And this is we're in 2018 now. So this is about March 2018, right? I had the store for about 6-7 months. March 2018. Go to this breakup and I'm still putting out a lot of content. But however, I wasn't making enough money to sustain the business. I wasn't making enough money to sustain my rent, my home rent, and also the business rent. Before, there was two incomes. Now with just the money I was making, it wasn't enough. But then some really good things happened. At that point in time, my name was really building a buzz, and I was in talks with, I had already done a sponsored series with Huawei. My name really got a lot of buzz in the corporate spaces because of that down here. Was in talks with Samsung to do a series similar to what we did with Huawei. Was in talks with Digicel and also in talks with B-Mobile. And at the time, B-Mobile was the people that were coming with me with the most gusto. They wanted me the most. And I started to work on crafting a content creator brand ambassador deal with B-Mobile. However, in order to get that deal, I had to hire an intellectual lawyer, an IP lawyer, to deal with the contract side for B-Mobile. But when I got the fee for the lawyer, I had a big conundrum on my hand. I could not afford rent, home rent, store rent, and pay for the lawyer. And I made one of the toughest decisions in my life. I decided to close the Droid Island store. And I also decided that in order for me to really succeed and put my all and energy and resources into my brand, I needed to move to my grandmother's and cut the rent costs as well. So I afforded the lawyer, was able to pay for her to work on a deal with me, close the store, move to my grandmother's house. But what I also did was, I was still getting calls because people still wanted to buy product. So what that forced me to do was, I had already learned how to build a website, right? I learned how to build a blog, learned how to build a website. I was then able to learn, take some real time to learn how to turn it into an e-commerce website. And I thought to myself, listen, there is no way I could afford to bring in the phones anymore and stock them. Stocking tech is super expensive because you still have to pay, you know, these ridiculous prices to purchase from your suppliers, the shipping fees, the customs fees. Then you still got to have a little bit of a markup to make some money to make it even worth your while. And so I knew I could not stock the phones anymore. So I learned how to build an e-commerce website, and I got this idea. I learned about, at that point in time, I learned about dropshipping. I thought to myself, well, okay, what if I don't stock the phones, but when the orders come in, I would get the money up front? Because it's just like Amazon. People are accustomed to going on Amazon and paying, or going on Walmart, paying for the products and waiting 2 to 3 weeks for it to come to the country. Why not me? Why don't I do something like that? And so I learned about WePay. Shout outs to Alden Wade. I learned about WePay. I learned how to convert my website into an e-commerce website. And then I learned that because I was blogging for so long, I was in the papers, I was on TV, there was a trust level with me that I had established. So when I told people that all of the orders had to go through the website, so they had to pay with either credit card, or you could use a bank deposit or an online bank transfer, or Paywise. They could have gone to a Paywise dealer and made the transactions. The transition for me was a heck of a lot easier because I had been putting in the work. and building up my name and building up that level of trust. So even when the people came and they were like, oh, you don't have the product on hand and I have to wait 2 weeks. Who you feel it is? Amazon? We don't trust you like that. I was still able to tell people, hey, you could Google me and show people news articles about me. And every single person that showed that there was a lack of trust because, well, they're giving you, you know, $8,000 TT, that's like over $1,000 US without seeing it, without seeing the product immediately, those people were able to really calm down and trust me because they, when I would send them, you know, the articles, when they Googled my name and they see that, oh, wow, this guy has done work with Huawei, Digicel, B-Mobile, Samsung, Loop, like he's all over the place. There was that sense of trust. And so at that point in time, I was able to convert my business into an e-commerce business. And I thought, wow, this is really amazing because now, you know, I'm not tied down to a physical store. I no longer have to pay a rent to the store for the store. And I don't have to stock the products. I can now focus on creating content. And the more content I create is the more trust I get, is the more eyeballs I get, is the more customers I get. And at that moment in time, I realized this is what digital entrepreneurship is all about. This is what being able to work from anywhere looks like, because now all I need is my laptop and create the content. Create my blogs, create the videos. When orders come in, they're going through my platform. I don't even have to speak to people the majority of the time. The orders are just coming in. And the freedom that I experienced during that time made me realize this is the way forward. The next milestone is really when I was able to work with B-Mobile. And they wanted me to do a 1 minute video. And the paycheck that I was able to say, okay, I want X for this video. And they didn't even bat an eye. They gave me, and at that time, that was the most I had ever been paid for content. And it was a significant piece of change. I mean, even if they came back and paid me for that thing right now, I would say, cool, you know, I ain't mad. It was a good piece of change. And then I realized, yo, content has a lot of value. I can get paid for content alongside selling products on the website. So the more I blog about the products is the more sales come in to the products. But then companies that are in my niche are seeing me as a content creator that is aligned with their brand that they can work with to get content on their platforms and help educate their own user base. And they were willing to pay for that. So I was making money in those areas. I then wrote my first ebook, put that on Amazon, got some sales off of that. But most importantly, it generated opportunities for me because now I became a self-published author. You know, people were finding my book, my ebook on Amazon, and that was the whole talking piece. It just added more credibility to my brand. And from that point, people outside of the customers, outside of the companies, people started to really take notice. And they would start to come to me and be like, yo, how were you able to build all of this? You know, you just came from Canada. How were you able to build this website? You know, get brand deals, you know. You have people selling online. People don't even want to do bank deposits with me. They want to meet me in person to give me cash. And then I give them the product. How are you able to establish this level of trust? And the more I started to get asked, how are you doing this? Who built your website? How did you build a website? How are you getting paid online? How? I started to realize there was just no place in Trinidad to learn how to do all of that. And so at the end of 2018, for my birthday, December in 2018, I started KarenRose.com. And I started that platform because I wanted to educate people back home in Canada and also in the US. I wanted to talk to them about, you know, my journey of moving from Canada and moving to the Caribbean and starting a business and, you know, everything that I was going through. And it was supposed to be an outlet for me to express, you know, just where I was at and just let me, you know, release my thoughts and my stresses and just let it be an outlet for me, right? I ended up starting to create some blogs, educating people on e-commerce and building their business online. And that took off. I started to get, you know, way more traffic. You know, I go out in public and it went from, hey, Mr. Droid, yo, love your videos. What's the best phone? To Mr. Rose, I just want to let you know that you changed my life. You gave me that one piece of information that I thought nobody else could give me because I've gone to the banks, I've gone to different companies, I've asked people, nobody could tell me how to get paid online. Nobody could tell me. You gave me this one piece of information, and because of you, I now am able to feed my family again. We were struggling, but learning from you and reading your blogs and bookmarking them helped me change the trajectory of my life. And I just want to say thank you. Listen to me. The minute I got that very first in-person feedback where a grown man who's much older than me almost started to cry, like I realized at that point in time, you know, everything happened for a reason. Every single thing happened for a reason. And it just started to happen more and more. Like when I go through my emails, my messages, you know, every three or four messages is somebody just saying, yo, thank you. You saved me. Thank you. You've helped me and you don't even know how much you've helped me. The feeling that I get from that and seeing that there's a bigger mission for me. At that point in time, I just stopped thinking about smartphones. Like it just, talking about smartphones just became, like that was something I was so passionate about since I was 19. And it almost felt like overnight, it just went away. My desire to talk about smartphones and sell smartphones and educate on smartphones, it just disappeared. And all I wanted to do was focus on helping people take their business online. Because when you go online, you no longer have the restrictions of geography. You're no longer limited to just selling to your community. You can now sell across the country. You could sell out of the country. You could start to earn US dollars. And US dollars goes a lot further in the Caribbean than it does living in the US or living in Canada. It goes a hell of a lot further in the Caribbean. So being able to teach people how to earn their money online, tap into the global economy, start to get clients outside of the region or even in the region or heck in another part of the country and getting paid and getting your goods from here to there, that just became that mission for me. And I didn't go out and look for it. But through everything that I have gone through back in Canada that led me to making the change to come here, to going to jail over here and just replotting my entire life, you know, the breakup that I had where now I had to learn more skills and make some tough decisions and force myself to learn e-commerce and logistics to get products to and from, and even digital product delivery. Having to, you know, be in these positions to learn all of these different skills, it finally made me see, you know, the real gap in the region that I can fill. And the joy that I have being able to do this, it's immense. Nobody will ever understand. And I mean, yo, it's crazy because like I'm here and it's just me in my space right now. And I just feel my eyes watering because nobody knows just how much it took to get to this point. Nobody knows. Nobody knows, man. Nobody knows. It took a lot. It took a lot. It took a lot. Wow. So this is why I like podcasting, man. Because there's no way I would have been tearing up on a show, or if, you know, somebody is interviewing me, but it's just me, man. And every one of you who tunes into my content, you know, everyone either tunes in that hails me out, that, you know, laughs with me, cracks jokes with me, like, you guys don't understand how much you guys do for me and just where I'm at. I think the other thing I really liked about, you know, becoming this digital entrepreneur is the fact that I can work in a space and I don't have to go out into the world. I can kind of just, you know, be in a space, be in my zone, and work. Put my headphones on, listen to music, learn, read, do my courses, implement, get my results in my business and do my thing. And at this point in time, like these past couple years, I've just needed that. I just needed to disappear. I know you guys have always heard that saying, you know, disappear for 6 months, you know, learn a skill, learn a passion, and, you know, your whole life can change. But it has not been 6 months for me. It's been what? Since 2016. Since 2016, I've felt like I've just kind of disappeared. And I mean, again, if you're listening, you would have been seeing me show up all the time. I'm showing up, you know, I'm doing my thing, I'm showing up. But, you know, when the lights are off, when the cameras are off, and, you know, I'm not blogging, but just in my own space, you know, I've really felt like I've disappeared, and I've needed this time to reinvent myself. I just moved to a new place about 2 weeks ago. So depending on when you're hearing this, but we're in June. So I just moved to a new place in June. And this is like the first place that I've had on my own with no, you know, ex or, you know, nothing, just on my own since I've moved to Trinidad. And it's, you know, it's been a while because last time I had my own spot was back in Canada. And it's just nice to, you know, come here and just, you know, have that space to kind of just recuperate from the world. But I have this amazing view now. And every morning I get to go outside. I grab my iPad. I do some work right on the patio while listening to the birds, smelling that lush greenery in the valleys. And it's just amazing the fact that I can sit on that patio, answer emails, blog, write scripts, you know, jot down ideas, and then come into the spot, shoot my videos, conduct workshops. You know, now we're doing the podcast. And you could do all of that remotely. So for each and every one of you listening in, especially if you're in the Caribbean, you don't need to leave the Caribbean to participate in the global economy. You do not need to leave the Caribbean to get clients in Australia, Japan, the UK, Canada, the US. You can kill it right from here. Trust and believe it. The only time I really tell people at this day and age, you know what? Yeah, go move, is to get perspective. Because I feel like if more people moved out of the Caribbean and lived in Canada, lived in the UK, lived in the US, and they got to really see what it's like to really work out there, to really pay taxes, and to really have to work, y'all would have a much different appreciation for what you guys have right here in Trinidad. I work hard in Trinidad. But I do not work Canada hard. I do not work nearly as hard as I did in Canada. Oh, heck no. But I work hard, just not Canada hard, because I don't need to. Cost of living is so much cheaper in Trinidad. I don't need as much money to live a good life in Trinidad like how I would need in Canada, you know? And because of that, I'm able to save a lot more money and I'm able to experiment in my business and I just have more disposable income to try things out here in Trinidad. Now, I say disposable income very loosely because I feel like every time I get, you know, a good chunk of change, we gotta, you know, go buy equipment to go do something bigger, and we just have to keep reinvesting in our skill sets and our knowledge and our brand. And oh my God, it just doesn't stop. I was laughing if for anybody that was watching my stories on the 2 days I took to really build the Digipreneur podcast brand, you know, y'all would have seen me laughing my head off when the cost for the Digipreneur .fm domain cost me 80 US. That is the most money I've ever spent on a domain in my life. But you know what? It's all a part of the brand experience and keeping everything nice and cohesive and creating something that is a nice talking piece. People see that digipreneur.fm and it's like, wow, this thing is official, you know? So this is really how Mr. Droid turned to the DigiBoss, the digital entrepreneur. And I hope that, you know, this podcast, I hope this entire series not only inspires you. I wanted to inspire you, yes, but the difference with me, I don't get inspired by, hey, you have to wake up and go and get it. I don't get inspired by the fluff. You can't tell me to just go chase your dreams. You can't tell me that because you will be in your most passionate voice. You need to chase your dreams. And I would be responding with, but how? How do I chase my dreams? What is step one? That is me. I want to know how. I don't get inspired with the fluff. I get inspired by the how. Anytime I hear any of my mentors, whether they're in books and workshops, wherever, when they tell me, hey, this is how you do it, and I do it and I see results, I am the most inspired ever because I was able to take action. I was able to learn something, to implement and get a result. And when I can learn, implement, get a result, I am the most inspired. So that is why you almost never see any fluff content from me. I don't know how to do it. But I also want to inspire you how I get inspired, and that is by action. I want to show you how to do it. Too many people will not show you how because they'll feel like, you know, well, they could charge you for that. They could charge you for that information. Yeah, sure. There's always a time to make money. And I will always give people typically the what and the why for free. The implementation is really where any infopreneur is supposed to charge. Teach people the what it is, the why it is. The how, the actual steps is usually where the money comes in. But then that comes in different forms. That could be in the form of an ebook. It could be in the form of a paid webinar, a workshop, one-on-one coaching. So there's a variety of ways to kind of scale the how and make it so that, you know, everybody can kind of fit into that pricing tier, because not everybody's going to be able to afford you one-on-one, right? So my platforms have really been focused on the teaching. Digital Age is focused on, you know, finding the Caribbean experts and the ones building these amazing companies in the region and some of our brightest experts who have, you know, thrived in their own respective spaces, and give you how-tos, show you how to use the platforms, show you their techniques, their skill sets, how to do different things in their respective niche. That is how-to, but it's visual. The podcast is going to be, you know, audio masterclasses, and we're also going to be able to get some backstories from people who are digital entrepreneurs as well, who have built their business online. I'm not too concerned with the people who have made their millions, you know, in a different time. I want to talk to the people who are making their money now. How are you building your business online? I want to get the gems from those people, because I know that's what's going to help the region move forward right now. Not all of us, you know, come from money. Not all of us, you know, have all of the connections. I just moved here. The one thing that, you know, God bless her soul, my grandmother, the one thing my grandmother did for me was just, you know, I had my room. So I didn't have to come and pay rent. But that helped me tremendously. But I had to figure out everything else. You know, not all of us come from connections. Not all of us come from money. So I want to find, you know, those entrepreneurs who are building their businesses and they're building their brands now. Those who are finding success on Twitch, who are, you know, killing it on TikTok and getting paid. Like, we're trying to get, you know, all these different, you know, entrepreneurs and experts. And again, Caribbean owners building companies that are helping us move and navigate the digital age and allowing us Caribbean entrepreneurs to get paid online and participate in the global economy. So I can't wait to go into episode number 2. I feel like I poured my heart out on episode 1. If you enjoyed this episode, I encourage you to like, subscribe on any of the major podcasting platforms of your choice. You know, feel free to reach out to me, you know, if this episode touched you in any which way, shape, or form. I'd love to hear from you. Episode 2 is coming soon. Like, I can't wait. I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm excited. And when your boy gets excited, things happen. I'm going to see y'all in the next episode. Thank you. It's your boy, Karan Rose. Now, before I leave, funny thing, right? In Canada and the US, people can't say Karan. So Canada, the US, the UK, they say Karan. So I've grown up always saying my name as Karan. My mom hated it, but, you know, everybody, you know, away calls me Karan. But in the Caribbean, it's Karan. So, you know, I have listeners from both sides of the fence because I lived my whole life in Canada. I'm fresh. I'm new, still new to the Caribbean. So, you know, bear with me when you hear Karan or Karan. See you guys in episode 2. Take care.
You've been listening to the Digiboss, Karan Rose. We hope your notepad was filled after this episode. Make sure to like, rate, and review the show. The learning doesn't stop, folks. And to make sure you don't miss any gems from the Digiboss, go over and follow him on all social media platforms at Karan Rose. Folks, don't just sit there with a notepad. We need you to implement at least one thing into your business before the next episode. That's the only way your business levels up. Thanks for listening to Digipreneur FM. Now go be great.